Did you wear your best shirt for this?
Shit plugged in. I've got everything. I mean, no beer. Whoa. Oh, he spelled misery, bro.
It's weird though, because you've got four bars there.
Shut up.
Weird, huh?
The internet is
You've
shit out there, Rachel.
got four
If you could open
bars.
the door for me, that'd be brilliant.
You're using 5G, man. Hi. I can't see you, you're blurred.
I think he knows what. Was it bad? I didn't see that actually. I just stepped over. Thank you, darling. Even though I didn't hear you. Right, keep it down, mouthpiece.
Hello and welcome to the Movie Chef podcast, where we make a meal out of movies. I'm your host, Tebs. Oh, and this is Corb.
Oh,
Cormac is delighted for you to see his beautiful face. This is our first episode on YouTube, so hello everyone, welcome.
I don't know if I'm excited, as in embarrassed, as in, well, I know. Listen, I
Yeah.
know what I look. I know what I look like. The second coming of George Clooney. I get that. You know. I get that a lot. Walking past the coffee machines and work, you go, oh, Nespresso. Yeah, I no, McCormick. No, McCormick, not George. And don't say a word.
And
And
we've had a fair few listeners join us since we've been away. We've had quite an uplift, so we thought we'd start doing YouTube. Plus, my mate Dan kind of got me into the bug of wanting to start putting episodes online when we were away in Philadelphia. The PCB Wrestle Podcast. We did regular videos and vlogs with him and what we got up to there. And I'm going to be uploading a video very soon to YouTube of me and him reviewing Pat and Geno's cheese sticks in Philadelphia. After
okay,
we'd had
I
a
don't know
belly
what
full of
that
beer. Okay.
is.
So I was a bit tipsy. I was a bit tipsy. And cheesesteaks in America, obviously, it is literally shaved steak, different kind of cheese on top, onions, peppers, without doubt, in a bun. There's your Philly cheesesteak. But apparently, people do them better than the others. And in Philadelphia, there's two spots, Pat and Geno's, which are right next door to each other. Literally, you can see one
Okay.
from the other. And they've been open for years. Now, the locals don't rate them at all. And they say it's just for tourists. So, as two tourists, we went there late at night, ordered one cheesesteak from either place, took it back to the flat, and reviewed it. So, that video is going to be online very soon. But yeah, this
But
is our video first.
where do the locals go?
Oh, I think there was Angelo's, there was John's, there's fucking loads of places, man. You can't move
Right,
for
okay.
cheesesteaks or pizza. If you like cheese, you're fine in Philadelphia.
If you like cheese and you like steak, you'll love
This
cheesy steaks.
episode is brought to you by the Philadelphia Tourist Board.
Yeah, who'd
But
be
yeah,
paying you? I've not seen any of this money.
Genuinely though, went to WrestleMania, absolutely amazing. I did about 4 or 5 days in Washington beforehand. I put a few videos on TikTok. It was just amazing. Ate too much, drank too much,
Okay,
spent
right
too
there.
much.
Okay, let's just break this down, right? No one is interested in any new wrestling that happened. Nobody. Nobody likes WWE, WWF. No one likes it. So what I want to know, right? Your top three famous wrestlers that you met, the top three wrestlers you met.
Briefly met Ted DiBiase, sound guy.
And why was it Hacksaw Jim Duggan? Why was it Hacksaw Jim Duggan?
Jim had a few people waiting for him, and Jim looked he's not been so well lately. He looked rough, and he was busy, and he's not been so well. So, but you I kind of give him one
Okay.
of
Well,
those.
here's oh, here's here's a
Hang in there,
question
Jim.
then.
Hang in there,
Thumbs
Jim.
up. How
Oh.
who didn't have a crowd?
Oh, a few, fair few people. Basically, we went in one room, and if you know wrestling, AEW is WWE's competitor. One of their mid-card guys is a guy called Wardlow. He was massively pushed last year, up-and-coming talent. No one at his desk. Next to him were the Hardy Boys. Their queue went all around the room, all down into the corridor. But Wardlow, and it was a surreal experience. Met Matt Riddle, who is now an independent wrestler, does a bit of New Japan. He left WWE for unknown reasons. But he started following us on Twitter at Pod Movie Chef. So thank you, Matt. But I sat and had a chat with him. I got a fist bump off the King of Bros. So that was pretty cool. And I met the Godfather as well, Papa Shango.
Mighty brilliant,
Awesome
brilliant
guy.
man.
And he said he telling me about how he'd lost a lot of weight recently, and he was looking trim compared to, when you see him back in the day. And I said to him, I've trying to lose a bit myself and everything, and he proper giving me like tips and motivation and everything. And he's such a nice, just took the time just to come off and just say, look, we're going to stand with you and just chat with you for 5, 10 minutes. And I was sort of stood there thinking, should I be leaving now? Have I had my allotted time with the Godfather? Can I stay if I want to? But the actual show itself, right? This is something I wanted to say on the podcast because people know that what happened with my mom about 18 months ago. And it was kind of like, it was weird, living in that time. And I'm not going to lie, she left something for me. And that helped me get to Philadelphia. That was kind of, I needed it to be perfect because it was her getting me there. And the WrestleMania when I was in Rome last September on my 40th birthday, this was WrestleMania 40. I was in Rome on my 40th birthday. The Rock comes back. New Year's Day, it hints that he's going to be at WrestleMania. And ever since then, and it developed into what I probably will put up as one of my top live show experiences ever. Football, music, wrestling, that moment. It was the culmination of stories, and I was a bit sort of emotional, and then I thinking if my mum was here, she'd be saying, I can't believe you're into that shit.
Yeah, stop following big burly men touching each other
She'd wonder
and
why are you watching half naked muscly
sweating
men?
all
We're
over each
not
other. Yeah,
sweating all over each other.
listen, Paul,
But
we've all wondered. We've all wondered. You know what I mean? It's
what I will say as well is outside now, apparently all the kids nowadays are into Prime. Is it Logan Paul? Well, it is Logan Paul that's spouting this
one of
shit.
them. One of them.
One of the Pauls. They were giving away these for free outside. Apparently, it's a very rare WrestleMania Prime branded bottle. Still full, still sealed. And these are going for about $100 on eBay. And what
Nice.
we're going to do, what I'm going to do for this podcast, because the hero I am, we're going to give this away to somebody who is watching us on YouTube. What we want you to do is like the video, comment below, and basically, me and Com talked about this. We're trying to think of a question. Funniest comment, whichever one makes us to proper laugh, you can say it about us. You can say it about movies, wrestling, the fucking news, whatever you want to do. Put a comment below, like the video, subscribe to us, and over the coming episodes, which we'll tell you about soon, we will announce the winner and I will post this out to you and you can sell it, you can drink it, you can do whatever you want with it. Yeah, that's coming up soon.
And to be fair, listen back to some of the other episodes. If there's a movie genre that you're interested in, have a listen back to some of the episodes. You'll kind of garner some of the humor if this is the first time that you're logging into this and it's the first time that you're hearing us two talk. That
Yeah,
might
yeah.
give you a breakdown of what's going to make us laugh.
If you want an idea about how we let you down as listeners, our top listened episode is Super Mario Brothers. And I guarantee that is because people have tuned in for about 5 minutes thinking they're going to hear about the Super Mario Brothers cartoon, which made $1.6 billion. And instead, it's us two talking about the 1993 version, which made about £4.50 in a bag of sweets. So that is the kind of
And
finger on the pulse that we have.
may I add, I think we were both tremendously drunk when we done that podcast.
Well, me and Cormac started this podcast, as you all know, we're better for new listeners. We started this podcast back in 2020, back when everyone was stuck in their houses, and we're still going now. I've got no idea how many episodes we've done. We have interviewed Jeffrey Wiseman from Back to the Future, Xander Berkeley, David Hayter, Natalia Baden from Planetino Cinemas, Uwe Boll. We've interviewed Uwe Boll. The Butler Hearts from Fizz and Ginger Films that have got a new film coming out that we are going to talk about on a coming episode. There is one of their films, Dagar, that's just coming out now, found footage horror that they've done. We've seen it and we're going to be talking about it now it's been released. So I've done a lot over the past 2 weeks. Can I quickly run past some things that I don't get about America to you?
Okay, let's go.
Right, Orange Fanta. Over here, it's the colour of orange juice. You know, fresh orange juice.
Within reason.
Yeah, it's kind of a pale, whitish sort of. Yeah. Over there, it is like the amber light on a set of traffic lights. It is bright neon. I'm just wondering how much... I'm walking through the supermarket, just looking at all these brightly coloured drinks that people throw down their necks. And they're worried about...
But that's the thing. That's the thing. There's too much choice in America, because Fanta is one of those things. I remember these American candy shops opened up in Belfast. I remember going in, and the one thing that always picked up on me was
definitely not a money laundering
Fanta. Yeah, but it's like, it's the Fanta. There's all these different colors of Fanta, and me growing up, there only was Lilt, Coke, maybe Pepsi if you're lucky, and Fanta. Like, I live in the backwater. And for some reason, there's now 10,000 colors, flavors of Fanta.
I need to talk to you about toilet water. So British toilet water. Please, it's something I need to talk about.
Tis beautiful.
British toilet water is like, it's quite shallow in the toilet, isn't it? It's literally, you know where I'm going with this. American toilet pan, the water... I swear, in the airport, and I know I'm getting old, but I swear I sat down and my ball bag was touching the water. Now, it's not that big. And it sits really high.
Does this lead us into the movie that we're going to talk about? Or
what, The Iron Claw?
Because the only thing I can think of now is... I bought a vampire motorcycle with Neil Morrissey when he's having a hallucinogenic dream, and he turns around and his turd starts talking to him.
Oh, no, it wasn't about anything I'd put in the toilet. I just mean the water sits so high in American toilets, and I just didn't understand it. I didn't know what I'm missing. Why? It's like, and then you stand up and you're looking down, and it's like a crime scene in there. And I don't want to look at that. It's all, oh, dear.
Why are you looking at the mess?
Over here, I'm going on a soapbox now. Over here, we have to use paper straws, paper carrier bags, paper carrier bag charge, right? I swear to God, every shop I went past, once it were closed, fully lit up like Las Vegas. All the lights were on, every Dunkin' Donuts, the lights were on inside, everything was on. They just locked the door and walked out. And the go on about trying to save the world by plastic and greenhouse and all. No, I'm serious. And you go over in America, it's like literally like fucking any canteen you go in, any cafe, anything, it's plastic cutlery. And I'm there thinking, it's all just getting fucking thrown away. And I just cannot believe the fucking waste. I can't.
How many clouds did you shake your fist at this morning?
Seven. I met a racist dog.
There's no such thing.
I met a racist dog.
Hold on. Was he racist against you?
Yes. Yeah. So
hold on. Whoa. Hello. Let's backtrack. So is it because of the color of your skin or the tone of your voice?
Hotel reception area. Large group of Chinese tourists. I was a tourist as well, but I was British still, you know. And they had a little pug, little dog, little yapper. And it proceeded around the whole group, going up to every one of them, tail wagging, and they're all stroking it, morning, stroke. And it came to me, looked up, and then just growled and started edging away, growling, until someone had to come and pick it up and turn it around so it didn't have to look at me anymore. What else was it other than racism?
Ugliness.
Hey.
Like, I don't know. Did he growl at any other white people?
I didn't hang around to find out, to be honest. Do you know how many Americans mistook my accent for Scottish and Irish? I had one Australian, and then I had a bunch of guys. Basically, every time somebody would say, hey, Irish? I'm like, nah. And then Scottish. I'm like,
how dare you, sir? How dare you?
Dan, at one point, I had to say to them all, you know we don't all sound like the Queen, don't you? You know, there is different levels.
See, now you know how it feels. Now you know how it feels that when I go anywhere, you know, when you start talking to someone, even my broad kind of accent that sounds like someone from, you know, Belfast, whenever someone tries to do my voice and they go, how about top of the morning to you? Yeah, you know, that's not how I speak. That's not how I speak. It's not even anywhere close to where I live.
I had so many people trying the old cheers. Yeah, hey, cheers, guys. And you're like, yeah, cheers. It felt like I was being mocked half the time, to be honest. But serious, customer service as well. American customer service is outstanding if they are getting paid to give it or they're working for tips. Anybody else, they would not give a fuck about you. Genuinely. Transit, public service, anything. Anybody, basically, I found anybody who was working for tips or was doing tour guides and things like that, they were absolutely falling over themselves, so polite, learning about you, everything. And then there was some people who, literally, there were people who worked for the city at one point that I needed to speak to, and they just did not. One of them walked away. One of them was just like shaking his head, walking off. And I'm like,
That's everywhere. That's not just America. That's UK as well. Like,
if an American tourist came up to you asking for directions, you'd help them because you're a friendly guy. You're a friendly people. You Irish in your green suits and your green hats and your beards.
Did I ever tell you the story about my brother going to New York? And he went there on his honeymoon and he was about three blocks away from the Empire State Building, and there was a hot dog vendor outside his hotel. So they was trying to think to himself, right, how do I get to the Empire State Building? So he went down and he said, listen, sorry to bother you, you couldn't tell me what way to take the Empire State Building. And the guy just turned around and went, fuck you, buddy, and walked away.
That's what I mean, man.
He just sat there. It was like, what the hell? And so he went inside and he was talking to the concierge, and the concierge is like, well, you have to understand that that's probably about the 40th time in the last hour that someone's asked him, you know, where's the Empire State Building? And I thought to myself, well, just get away from the Empire State Building. Go find somewhere else.
Just look up. Look up and you can see it. But there was one guy, right? This guy, and I thought, oh, man, what a fucking shit day you're in for. It was one of the security guards outside because I went to see the Declaration of Independence and the Bill of Rights, you know, the original documents. And it's in the National Archives Museum. And I'll go to the guy, I'm like, which entrance? Because I've got a ticket to get in. Free ticket, but it says turn up at 10:30 and go in. I went, all right. And he goes, you got to go around that corridor and down there. All right. So I went round and there's a woman stood there and she's like, who told you to come this way? I'm like, the guy out front. She goes, motherfucker. 2 minutes later, two more people are coming and it's just sending people the wrong way all day long. He just didn't give a fuck. He was just sending people to the exit and sending them.
But I like that, though. I like that, though. Did you have to pay for a ticket to the National Archive? Or did you just get up and go, we used to own this place?
Excuse me.
Sorry, sir.
I wanted to say to one of the tour guides, you know these would look great in the British Museum, don't you?
as does everything else. Yeah.
This week on the menu this week, we were going to talk about America, which we've done. We're also going to be discussing news in brief. We're going to go over Cormac Corner, where this week, Cormac, you have seen Ghostbusters, Frozen Prophets or something. What's it called?
Frozen Empire.
Frozen Empire. We are going to be discussing the Iron Claw in the spirit of the wrestling I've just watched, and we've seen the Iron Claw and won't talk about it. And then we're going to briefly discuss the Christopher Nolan series of episodes that we're going to be doing over the coming 4 or 5 weeks. So, Cormac, Let's talk about news first. Let's do quick fire news. So this is where I give you five bits of news, and I want you giving me a. Well, in we did a Ridley Scott episode, and you said, "Is it a Ridley Scott or Ridley not?" So let's have a Ridley yay or Ridley nay. Okay.
Okay, well, I like it. Ridley nay. Yeah, I like it.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles: The Last Ronin live action film is in the works from Paramount.
Yeah, couldn't give a shit.
Is that it? Quick fire. Couldn't give a fuck.
That's quick fire. Didn't see the first one. Won't see the second one.
Joker 2 will be better than the first.
It'll be hard. Because Joker 1 was trash. Probably. But like, how far down the rabbit hole are we going to go with Joker 2? Like, that's what I want to know. I need to understand. I need to mentally prepare myself for what the movie actually is. Is it a musical or is it a movie that has songs? Because there is a very distinct difference between those two.
I think it's a jukebox musical. Phillips has said there's at least 15 different songs in there. Blumhouse are remaking the Blair Witch Project.
Why? Genuinely, why? I do not care what anyone says, right? I don't care what anyone says. Blair Witch is genuinely one of the scariest movies I've ever watched. And I don't care what anyone says. I am not a massive horror fan. I'm not a massive fan of jump scares. Somebody sent me a video of somebody standing on a landmine today, right? And I swear to God, it nearly gave me a panic attack. And my head just doesn't compute this. I don't like to do anything that causes me not pain, but anything in my mind that kind of goes warped, and I'm like, no, I don't. Why would you show that to me? Why doesn't make me happy? Nothing like that doesn't make me happy. It doesn't give me pleasure that I don't want to watch it.
So that's another.
Sorry.
But yeah, the thing with the Blair Witch Project, it is, you can't remake it as a gritty indie film because that's what it is. And it doesn't work as a sleek Hollywood blockbuster because they tried that in the second one, Book of Shadows or whatever the fuck it was called. It don't work. Yes, you know what? I agree. 99% of that film was nothing. But the one moment, spoiler alert for a nearly 30-year-old film, if right at the end she goes down in the cellar and she sees the young lad stood towards the corner of the room, and everything that had linked him before that built up to that one sort of, oh, geez. And yeah, it made it for me, but it's not worth a remake. There's nothing to remake in it. You do nothing. Anyway.
You're trying to touch gold. You're trying to, you know, get touch the lightning bolt again on a movie that was perfectly marketed. Do you know what I mean? So we all know what Blair Witch is now. The first Blair Witch, I had no clue what it was. And then I went to see it. Didn't know if it was real or not. Didn't know if it was, you know, it was the start of the internet and nobody knew what viral marketing is. It's the most successful viral marketing movie that's ever been and there ever will be.
Glenn Powell is to star in Edgar Wright's remake of The Running Man.
Who's Glenn Powell?
Smug guy from Top Gun Maverick. You know, the other smug one. Which, hang on. The blonde smug guy who flew a jet in Maverick. No, okay. You know, right. Do you know Goose's son? You know Goose's son? Drummer boy. Not him.
Yeah.
Not him. Not Miles Teller. The other one. You know, the one who was like a bad guy, but he came to see.
So Tom Cruise is in this movie.
No, Glenn Powell. He's the other one. So, you know, like the trainee pilots, you had Goose's son, Goose Jr., and you had the other one who was trying to be the hotshot top guy, top gun. And he saved the day at the end. Him. Anyway, he's not Arnie. So, Edgar Wright remaking The Running Man.
I was going to break into, why are they remaking Running Man? Running Man was perfect. And then you said Edgar Wright, and I was kind of like,
Tell me more, Edgar.
Hmm. interesting. I trust him. That's the thing. I'll give it the, you know, the brevity of which it deserves. I will trust that Edgar Wright can make a decent movie out of this, and I'll hold my opinion.
Well, apparently he is remaking. Well, is it not remaking? He's making a version of the book, as opposed to remaking the Schwarzenegger. And of course, we all know that the action movie, The Running Man, was vastly different from the source material. Final piece of news.
Sorry to interrupt you. Did Stephen King write The Running Man?
Yeah.
Yeah, he did. Or
was
it
under the different name? Yeah, but
yeah.
And finally, Paul Walter Hauser will be playing Chris Farley in his new biopic. Paul Walter Hauser has been in a variety of bits and Richard Jewell, I, Tonya.
Do you know what this reminds me of? Do you remember when Michael Chiklis played Jim Belushi? Or James Belushi, sir?
When was that?
Belushi. John Belushi. He was in a biography of John Belushi in like the late 80s, and it was absolutely fucking panned. And like Chiklis in recent years had to come out and apologize for it and stuff. Like everybody hated it. It made no money, and like all like John Belushi's family and friends absolutely hated the idea because it was so close after he died. But I remember one late night watching it, and it is mad.
No, this is Paul Walter Hauser from I, Tonya, Richard Jewell, and funnily enough, he was in the main event of one of the wrestling shows I went to. He's developing himself a bit of a wrestler. He was in a death match against Sammy Callahan, I think it was. pizza cutters, paper cuts, and lemon juice on his hands. Thumbtacks, staple gun. Oh, he went for it. Yeah. Paul Walter Hauser is there in my book. He took a beating that night. He took a beating.
A man for all seasons.
Hey, look, if you can get in a ring and have another man staple gun your face, then you can play Chris Farley, in my opinion. He just needs to play him. It's a Ridley yes. One thing I wanted to quickly go back, just going back to travel again. Movies on planes. If anybody is watching this and they can put in the comments, why is it that if I watch an R-rated film when I flew out at 12 in the afternoon, so it was during the day, and I could watch Mortal Kombat, they dubbed out all the swearing, but yet I could still watch a man slice another man open with a spinning rotating hat and cut arms off and everything. The violence was still there. God forbid those kids should hear any swearing on planes. The ones during the night, all the swearing was there. So why cut the swearing out?
You used to work in Blockbuster. I worked in Game. And the overarching thing was women and men who are fathers and mothers of children have absolutely no problem with their sons playing things like Assassin's Creed or Saints Row. But if you go towards a little bit of booby in GTA, then that's where they draw the line. That's where the line is completely drawn.
Oh, sorry, I do have one bit of news for quickfire news before we carry on to Cormac Corner. Coyote versus Acme has not been picked up for release. What did we say it was? 50 quid? 20 quid?
We had a bet about
four, five, well, probably about 10 episodes ago now, that I said Coyote versus Acme had been shelved and wasn't coming out, and you said you guarantee it would be released by the 1st of May.
Yeah, I've got 10 days.
10 days. So in 10 days, it needs to be purchased, marketed,
yep.
And released.
Yep.
But, okay.
100%.
Yeah, I'll be honest, my heart sank a little bit when Netflix started circling, but
if the Butler Hearts can make a movie on an iPhone in lockdown, we can get this done in 10 days. All right. That's all I'm saying. We can get this done in 10 days.
We had a bet, £20, that I said it would not, and you said it would.
I offered
to increase it to 100.
I still believe that we can get this done.
1st of May, everybody. So let's go over to Cormac Corner. So this is where you tell us about a film or something you've watched. Just to stop you going off on a tangent every other time we talk, really. We are giving you your own little 5-10 minutes so you can just go on.
But this is where I watch movies that Paul doesn't want to watch.
Well, I do actually want to see Ghostbusters 2, 4, 3, hey, Paul. Part 2.
Hey, Paul. No, you don't.
Come on, then. Cormac Corner, tell us about Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. Spoiler-free review of Ghostbusters.
Okay, I'm going to try this. All right, spoiler-free. So, obviously, Afterlife came out 4 years ago, 3 years ago. So, it's all kind of set up. So, Phoebe and Trevor are, you know, the new youngish Ghostbusters. Paul Rudd is playing Mr. Gruberson, whatever his fucking name is. Callie, the mother. In this, they all come in, and everything now is set in New York. Everything's set in New York. Everybody who lives in Oklahoma is now in New York, and there's no explanation as to why. They're all just living in New York. The kids that were living in Oklahoma are now living in New York. Podcast is living in Dan Aykroyd's basement. For no explanation as to why. He's living in Dan Aykroyd's basement. I don't fucking understand it. It's just the way it is. Just deal with it, Paul. Deal with it. That's the way it is now, all right? Do you want to watch a movie that just doesn't know what it is? A teen movie? Is it a horror movie? Is it a kid's movie? You know, what is it? Who knows? They don't know. You know, do you want to watch a movie where characters just turn up for no apparent reason? Where characters are just there and you're like, oh shit, yeah, it's you from the first movie. Why are you here now? Shouldn't you be in Oklahoma? Yeah, this is the movie for you. If you want to watch a movie where it is very apparent, I'm going to try to word this correctly, where there's a kind of sexual tension between a ghost and a 15-year-old girl, go for it. It's all there. It's all there for you. The main problem with this movie is it doesn't know what it wants to be. If they had chosen a lane like the first Afterlife, where it's a kid's movie, it's a, you know, a teenager's movie, a coming of age movie. If they'd have chosen that, then it would have been semi-watchable. But they chose to throw as many people into this movie as humanly possible. And Bill Murray is in the poster, and that is, you know, that's a cod. He is in two scenes in the movie, and he turns up and he's Bill Murray. Bill Murray turns up and is Bill Murray. Kumail Nanjiani turns up and is Kumail Nanjiani. Paul Rudd is in the entire movie, and he is Paul Rudd. Think of all the Paul Rudd performances that have went in the past. This is Paul Rudd. He is Paul Rudd, and he's always going to be Paul Rudd, and he cannot play another character anymore. It infuriated me, because at the heart of it, the first 45 minutes were so fucking boring. There was nothing happening, nothing at all. They tried to shoehorn so many storylines into it. They tried to shoehorn so many characters into it that they just didn't know what they wanted to be anymore. Trevor, the brother, Finn Wolfhard, literally didn't need to be in this movie. The main thing that he's in this movie was to try and find why the slime was coming from the roof. Slime. Oh. Slime.
I get it.
Slimer was in it. Stop, Paul. Slimer was in it. Slimer.
Spoiler alert.
No, like, as soon as you see it, slime. And that's it. Twice. Bang. Same thing. Same two scenes. Slimer was in it. They go, bye. See you there, bye. And that's why Finn Wolfhard was in this movie. It was such a letdown. I so much enjoyed Afterlife and was so willing to give this movie a try. And you know what? There are a couple of really good things in it. You know, James Acaster didn't annoy me. Sorry, James Acaster's in it as well. Podcast is now, for some reason, a hot 17-year-old, but everyone else has kind of stayed the same. Who knows? Who knows? But anyway, the bad guy in it is actually creepy. It was so underplayed. It's ridiculous. They should have really focused the movie on that. There is a kind of eerie undertone. And it's like the worst kind of signposting in movies that you want to see, because you can see the the references to the first two Ghostbusters from a mile away. You can tell them. I can't remember his name. The bad guy in Ghostbusters 1 who shut down the thing. Can't remember his name. No, the bad guy who comes in and they all swear at him. They call him Nicholas or something like that.
William Atherton.
Yeah, who's the mayor of New York City now? Him. Yeah.
They had to get him back, didn't they?
The guy who runs the New York Library still runs the New York Library.
Same guy.
Yep, same guy. Right. The ghost in the underneath the library, still there. Same ghost. They didn't catch it the first time around. They just left it there. There it is, still there. They just decided, you know what? The first ghost we find, we'll just let it go. We'll just let it be. Well, it's fine. No problem whatsoever. Like, it's just there's just so many. It's annoying because there's so many good things that was created in Afterlife. I think your wee girl, McKenny Grace, is still good, but she is so misused in this movie. It is insane. I am not a fan of just shoehorning people in just because you think that they're going to get an extra few pounds through the door.
For me, this should have been Afterlife, your old guard, bring them back, crowd-pleasing moment, build up your new characters, and then let's have a Ghostbusters film. Set it in the firehouse. Tell them they've gone and bought the old firehouse. Have Ernie Hudson there if you want. But have them as Ghostbusters investigating and busting ghosts, and they don't need to rely on old tropes, and it sounds like they have again, which is...
But it was just adding things and needless things in, you know, Paul Rudd going, am I a father? Am I a... And then it's like, oh, here we go. Here's another storyline that they're adding in. Just disappointing. Very disappointed in it. I expected so much more. And I think that guy, is it Gil Keenan, the guy who directed it? And I don't want to put everything on him, but, you know, Reitman made a better movie.
It was quick out. Because I went today to see Godzilla King Kong New Empire, whatever it was called. Mm-hmm. That came out in March 21. And Ghostbusters must have come out at Christmas 21, mustn't it?
Yeah.
Or did they have Ghostbusters held for ages and, you know, they'd filmed it before the pandemic or something? I don't know. But it just felt like that. It feels like as a sequel, it's almost been rushed out.
Maybe it has. It seemed like it. It just seemed that they wanted to add so much into it and nothing really hit.
Have you seen Godzilla King Kong?
Mm-mm.
A new one?
I will be going. I want it. Godzilla Minus One is still in the cinema over here. So I'm going to go see Minus One and I want to go see it. So I'm going to try and do a doubleheader.
We will be doing an episode on the evolution of characters. We're going to try and start thinking about what we do a bit more. So we're going to do an evolution of a character. We're going to start with Godzilla. So we're going to talk about from the inception of Godzilla, where it came from, and then the different iterations around the world over the last... And that's going to be a one-off episode at some point in the future. Godzilla, King Kong, you know what? If you liked the first one, you'll probably like the second one. Same mistakes keep happening with these. The human beings are boring. I don't care about them. I want to see humans get squished, and that's it. That's all that you're in these films for. Godzilla, again, seemed a little underused. Got a bit more to do, shall we say, but still feels like... I know Godzilla is supposed to come in and save the day at the end, and that's your big brute, you know, but it just felt like in a Godzilla King Kong movie, the narrative, again, is all focused around Kong and what he's doing and how it affects Godzilla rather than the other way around. So, but in terms of big... gorillas and lizards punching each other, it would be great.
Has there ever been a Prince Kong?
Go and see Godzilla King Kong and you'll... No, that's not a spoiler, actually.
Did they fuck?
Yeah, it's like when Donkey fucked the dragon in Shrek.
Kongzilla. Godzilla, God Kong versus Kingzilla.
Wow, why don't we do this stuff? So we watched Iron Claw, and this is a spoiler review of the Iron Claw. Now, to be honest, if you're going in to watch the Iron Claw not knowing anything about what happened, then fair play to you. This is Anything? Sorry, did you have anything more from your?
No, I was just getting my Ironclaw.
So yeah, the Ironclaw came out just a few weeks ago now. It is a wrestling sports drama starring Zac Efron, directed and written by Sean Durkin. And this is about the Von Erich family from wrestling. They were big in Texas, huge in Texas, from sort of the late 70s until the mid 80s. And like I say, this is Zac Efron starring as Kevin Von Erich, Jeremy Allen White from The Bear, Harris Dickinson, Maura Tierney, and Holt McCallan. I can never say his name. Holt, get a better name. Holt Mac. And Lily James pops up as a female character that's needed. So, like I say, I knew the story of this. This is the perceived curse of the Von Erichs, the tragic. And we're going to spoil it now, but again, you might already know. But anyway, it's true life. It happened in the 80s. This is the story of a wrestling family where there were six brothers and they lost five of them over time, whether it was losing one as a child or through various other things that happened throughout the story. I kind of like that they focused on Kevin. He was obviously the last. Yeah. He's still with us now. I think he's living on a ranch in Hawaii, just living his best life. I was saw a documentary with him, and he just said, I just wanted to go and do this every day, so I just moved to Hawaii and sit in a hammock every day. And you're like, imagine having...
But that's the thing as well. Kevin Von Erich is one of the most interesting, because we're far removed. I grew up with WWF. I love WWF. I love the Texas Tornado. You know, finding out a little bit more about his youth was kind of good. But we are so far removed from those kind of like days of the territories in America, you know, the Texas territory, and you know, these you know, Dallas auditoriums. There's, I think it was called the Sportatorium.
Sportatorium.
No, if you watch Dark Side of the Ring or Tales from the Territory or something out there, you'll have a bit of knowledge of, you know, the past of the Von Erichs and things. But to think about it like this, and how big that the Von Erich family were in the Sportatorium or in Dallas. The shows that they used to put on every month, the main event shows every month they put on in the Sportatorium, 45,000 people would turn up for these things. 45,000, and they used to turn thousands away.
Oh, there were big shows like that they used to run. Oh, there was thousands of people going. This was huge. This was huge back in the 80s. And the Von Erichs from Texas were widely regarded as, I mean, they're in the Hall of Fame now, but they're widely regarded as being key, you know, similar to the Hart family, who have developed wrestling into what it is today. You know, the McMahons have done the business and everything, but as a wrestling family, the Von Erichs are up there. Fritz is shown as, you know, the patriarch at first. If I've got any criticisms about this, look, first of all, I know it sounds daft, I think Zac Efron was probably just a bit too bulked up compared to the rest of his family. It's like, I know it's picky, but it was just kind of a bit distracting at one point.
It kind of looked like he was wearing a rubber suit.
Yeah, and I know that was probably all natural. They probably wanted to put his best into it. But you look at pictures of Kevin Von Erich from that time, it wasn't that big. It didn't need to be that big.
Yeah, I picked that up as well, because Kevin Von Erich was the gangly one. Kevin Von Erich was the tall, you know, not wearing the boots, you know, wearing, you know, just no socks, just bare feet. And it was always Kerry. Kerry Von Erich was the fucking, the juiced monster. You know, he always came across as that. But I genuinely, you know, I think the portrayal, I think Holt McCallan, who played Fritz, I think anything that he's in, I enjoy. I've rewatched Mindhunter. I've rewatched Mindhunter in the last 3 weeks again, and I'm still gonna beat this fucking drum. That show needs to come back, and I need to get an ending, some sort of an ending. But when I see him in it, I know it's gonna be solid. And he always gives that impression. And even in Mindhunter, you know, the Johnny Unitas haircut, you know, he's the all American, you know, and his boys are gonna be brought up the way that he wants them brought up. I think the relationship between the sons and the father, it's just so interesting, and just the way that they're always just trying to one up each other.
Yeah, I didn't get that feeling. I got the feeling I got the feeling that the father was making them, trying to get them to compete with each other. But every time the parents were just saying, you need to sort that out yourselves, boys. they were constantly, they were, it was like they weren't, they were managers and trainers for wrestling. They weren't parents. The parenting, the growth, the discipline, it all had to happen within the brothers. So the brothers managed themselves. And it felt like, it felt like the father, Fritz, was almost engineering it to try and get them competing with each other, to get them hating each other.
Yeah.
Where he gave the title opportunity to David instead of Kevin.
Yeah. That scene in the dressing room where he comes in and the three are there, that kind of broke my heart a wee bit, where he takes it away from one son and puts it on the other, but the other son has to act as if, you know, this is for the good, this is for the good of the family, and it was so maniacal. But you know what though, it's this guy Jeremy Allen White has just, you know, exploded onto this scene for me. Like I genuinely had no idea about the Bear or anything. I had no idea about Jerry Allen White. I thought he was outstanding as Terry Von Erich. I thought everything that he did, and the storyline of the, you know, I think they could have probably looked into the storyline a little bit more about his, you know, the accident and losing the foot and things like that. They kind of
The film, it had to move at a swift pace. I mean, the fact that they didn't include Chris Von Erich in this, who was another brother who also passed away, is, and they, David, I think, also had a child that died very young as well.
Mm-hmm.
And Sean Durkin's been in an interview saying, if I'd have included everything that had have happened, well, first of all, you wouldn't have believed it.
Yeah.
And second of all, that much death and despair does not a great movie make. And even with real life, you have to take some bits out. But for me, it did move very quickly from David to Kerry, and then he wins the title and then has his accident. Well, that was 2 years later.
Yeah.
And I'm there thinking, see, as a wrestling fan, I know the story of the Von Erichs. Would a Kerry Von Erich film have been better?
Yeah, 100%.
The time to look at him going from the Olympics, losing it by the USA pulling out of Moscow Games, to becoming a wrestler, to winning the title, to losing your foot, to going to WWE, and then being cast aside. That's a great story there. But you've got that much going on around it that there was no time to do it. But other little pet peeve, well, no. The amount of footage we have of Ric Flair from that time.
Yeah.
And whoever was doing the director say, look, mate, nobody can copy Rick. You need to make this your own. And it's like, no, you just go and copy Ric Flair. That's all you need to do. Just maybe find someone who looks like him to start with. That'd have worked.
But, well, the one thing that I looked into this, right, and I think this is a kind of good side of this, of Iron Claw coming out. I think it was so overlooked at Oscar season, because it rings every bell which seems to, you know, that Oscar wants. But I think this could be the kind of, obviously the McMahon thing is a big thing. Obviously Vince McMahon, you know, leaving WWE, and, you know, the controversy that's been caused by that. I think this could open up the floodgates on actual really, really, really good, gritty WWF, you know, individual stories that could be coming out. I mean, you look at it, imagine a story of Jake the Snake. I know we've seen it on Beyond the Mat and the Diamond Dallas Page documentary and things that got there, but what a story Jake's life could be. Ravishing Rick Rude, you know, there's so many interesting people.
What if you can take this film and films like The Wrestler with Mickey Rourke, and you make wrestling stories like that? People will buy into them. People recognize that it's triumph over adversity. It doesn't matter what they're doing. People go to football films, baseball films, gymnastics, boxing, wrestling, no matter what it is. And wrestling is full of great stories, not the wrestling films that make it out as a mockery. And this, it was still, it kind of still played into kayfabe a little bit, that they said, you're going to have your opportunity. You need to go to Japan and show you're worthy. It's like they're not saying you need to go and maybe we'll... It's just saying you work your way through the ranks, which is what happened. You go work your way through the ranks. You get put in a program with someone for 6 months. You make sure that you can have an outstanding match together. You see if you get the crowd on your side. And there was just so much going on this. But I'll give Efron his dues. It was a solid, absolutely fantastic performance from him. It was great.
If you've seen things of Kevin Von Erich, there's multitudes of talking heads on these Beyond the Mat, Dark Side of the Ring episodes, and Kevin Von Erich is one of them. If you are going solely based on Kevin Von Erich's perception of himself, even in these things, Efron hits it. He nails it completely.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't. He's not. Kevin Von Erich doesn't. And I mean this in the nicest possible way. Kevin Von Erich doesn't come across as the fucking sharpest knife in the drawer.
No.
And Efron plays that to a T.
Yeah. But look, very enjoyable. I think it did the sport of wrestling. I think it did the Von Erichs proud. And I just hope it shows some enthusiasm in the general public for wanting to see. And, you know, wrestling's doing its great numbers at the minute. This film was actually executive produced by Maxwell Jacob Friedman, MJF, who was AEW title holder at the time. And he had a very brief blink and you miss it cameo as Lance Von Erich later on in the film, but yeah, he will have worked with him a lot. Chavo Guerrero Jr. was in this. Ryan Nemeth, who is Dolph Ziggler's brother, he appeared in this as Gino Hernandez, which is another amazing story to look back on. But it had some wrestling talent behind this to put the matches together, and like I say, it did its part. It did really well.
Yeah, but that's the thing though, isn't it? If you give a wrestling movie the respect that it deserves, you will get it. You will get a good movie, and it's been proven over time.
So, coming up on our episodes over the next couple of weeks, your hands go blurred to focus to blurred
I know,
to focus.
I've seen that.
Kind of weird.
Yeah.
We are going to be talking about the life and career of Christopher Nolan, British film royalty now. He's won his Oscar.
He's a sir.
Is it Sir? Sir Chris Nolan.
It's a Sir Christopher Nolan.
Have you got my scarf? And basically what we're going to do is we're going to be discussing. So the Movie Chef podcast came about with an idea that we do episodes with menus. So each chef, Tebs and Com, would create a menu. And it would be originally started that it was a starter, how to introduce somebody to a talent, a film, a genre, a fish course, something that's stinking, a main course, the best of the best, and a dessert, which is a self-indulgent pleasure. What we've kind of realized is it's actually a lot more fun to talk about decent stuff than shit films, because otherwise we just pan stuff all the time. So we're going to do this differently. We're going to talk about Christopher Nolan's films over the next 4 episodes. We're going to devote an entire episode, like we have done today, to each film. So Cormac, what were your 2 choices to go in the Christopher Nolan menu?
Mine's were Memento and the Prestige.
And mine were Interstellar and Inception. So we're looking at the broad diverseness of his films. I particularly wanted to look in each one of those films for how he perfects different parts, such as storytelling, the narrative, visual effects, and how they all came together for Oppenheimer to win the Oscar. Before you start, we've done an episode on Oppenheimer already, so we're not including that one. And Batman's don't count, because we've talked about Batman till we're blue in face. So we don't need to talk about Batman. You know how great the Batman films are. They're on your shelf. Go and put them on. Go and watch them. They're great. So next week is going to be Memento. Then it's going to be Prestige the week after. Then it's going to be Inception. And then it's going to be Interstellar. Don't forget on this YouTube video, if you're not listening to us on Spotify, thank you very much. Give us a 5-star rating. If you're not, get on YouTube, The Movie Chef Podcast, at The Movie Chef Podcast. Find us on YouTube. Give us a subscribe. Give us a like. Put a comment down below, something that will make us both laugh. Over the next couple of weeks, we're going to keep the video live, obviously. And whoever makes us laugh the most with the best comment will win a bottle of Prime with WrestleMania exclusivity on it, and you can do whatever the fudge you want with it.
So you're going to sell it. I know you're going to sell it.
You're going to put it on eBay. I could have had 60 quid.
Scumbags.
Yeah. Dude,
I'm already calling them scumbags. Fucking scumbag. How dare you fucking take this from him and put it up.
What I'll do is I'll keep buying it back and keep giving it away again. And we'll just...
Gotta spend money to make money, Lou.
I'll just keep driving the driving the bids up. Plus 10p. So yeah, thanks very much, everybody. Like I say, give us a like, give us a subscribe, follow us on Twitter at PodMovieChef, and you can go to the website www.moviechefpodcast.com. We will be back next time with Memento. Anything from you, Cormac?
I am going to watch Memento backwards, and then I'm going to watch it forwards.
I'm going to watch it. Goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye.